Trade PMR offers to support the growth that RIAs deserve. Whether you're looking to add an additional custodial services provider or make the switch to a new one, Trade PMR offers advisors access to dedicated team members. So when you need help, you know exactly who to call. Trade PMR, member of FINRA and SIPC. Welcome to the WealthStack podcast. I'm your host, Shannon Rosick, the director of WealthStack Content Solutions. My guest on this episode is long overdue. I'm joined by the godfather of fintech himself, Joel Bruckenstein, and also the president of T3, if we want to be a little more formal about it. And for today's topic, what's next for wealth tech? So we'll be covering a lot of ground today. Joel, great to finally have you on the podcast.
Great to be here.
All right. So before we dive into the first segment, let's start with your background. And I swear this is going to be one of the hardest questions you'll get this entire conversation. So tell me about what makes Joel, well, Joel, and how the T3 conference ultimately all came to fruition. You just celebrated the 20th year anniversary. Obviously, huge congratulations. That's no easy feat, but let's hear about it.
Sure. So I started on the institutional side of the business in 1980 in foreign exchange. Started my own RIA in the mid 90s. And when I did, I got very frustrated very fast. I found that there was very little useful information about advisor technology available. And a lot of it was, how can we say, not exactly impartial. There was no consumer reports for technology for advisors. Everything was kind of shaded and a lot of it was sponsor driven, although I didn't know that at the time. When I made some tech purchases based on what I thought were impartial recommendations, and I found they weren't impartial and the tech, to use a technical term, sucked, I got angry. And so I started volunteering, actually, initially to write some articles about technology for advisors for various industry publications. That led to a conversation with Dave Drucker, who was a member of NAPFA at the time, and he said, you know, I have a lot of the same frustrations you have. How about we write a book about this and tell people how to get into the 21st century? This was around 99 or early 2000. So we published our first book with Bloomberg Press, which was Virtual Office Tools for a High Margin Practice. All of a sudden, some people started listening to us. We went around on the circuit telling people at that time that things like they needed an email address, that they needed a website, and a lot of times we were laughed off the stage. But eventually people started listening. And then my other observation was that if we went to, at that time, an FPA conference, an APFA conference, whatever, technology was always an afterthought. It got, you know, I remember doing a session at an APFA conference after dinner at, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 o'clock at night, because we got moved to the worst possible slot. And one year, I think it was 2012 at FPA National, we were promised a couple of good slots and I brought in a great speaker and they moved them from that great slot to 8 o'clock Sunday morning. And I said, enough is enough. They don't give any respect to technology. So we should start our own technology conference. And that's what we did.
Well, I've been attending T3 since my investment new days. So it's probably been six, at least 7 years now. And, you know, I want to say thank you for always allowing me to show up with a camera and supporting my wild video endeavors. Not everyone would allow a life-sized iPhone to their event or have someone run around in a purple trench coat and fedora asking companies about their tech. So I have to ask, can you share some of your favorite stories from T3 over the years, at least ones that you can share out in the open on a podcast?
There's a lot I can. But first of all, we love doing zany things like having people running around in purple trench coats. That's fun. And fun adds to the whole experience. I would say year three, you know, was kind of epic at T3. We've talked about it various times. We did a survey and we asked advisors what they wanted. And they said, we want a very inexpensive hotel on the beach in Miami Beach in, I think it was February or something. And yeah, we delivered that, but the hotel was atrocious. Things blew up, things broke. People had cars stolen from the valet parking lot. It was just a total disaster. So it was certainly one of our more memorable conferences in many ways, even though the content and the people were great. I can remember Bob Curtis, ex of Money Guide, doing a skit with live chickens that almost got us expelled from the hotel, because apparently it said in our contract that we couldn't have any livestock, live livestock, and that was considered live livestock. One year we had a same company spend a lot of money to get a real replica of the Iron Man suit, like the real one, like in the movies.
Oh, wow.
Had that on stage, and that was a lot of fun. So yeah, over the years, we've had a lot of fun with various things that we've done and various presentations that have taken place at T3.
But most importantly, what happened to the chickens?
Yeah, I mean, that's also a funny story. There was another vendor who was there who asked that exact question of Bob. And I guess Bob Curtis was thinking he was going to return them to whoever he bought them from. And the guy said, can I have the chickens? I have a chicken farm. I was like, what? Yeah, so there was a whole conversation about what was going to happen to the chickens afterwards. But we needed to get them out of the hotel very, very fast.
I'm glad it had a happy ending, though.
I hope it had a happy ending for the chickens. I don't know. They could have been chicken soup somewhere for all I know.
Oh, that's also true. But we'll just believe that they went off to their little farm and animal sanctuary and lived out the rest of their days. But
I prefer to think that, yes.
Exactly. So thank you for indulging me. Like I said, hardest questions out of the way first. And so I want to dive into our first segment of the podcast that I call Stats All Folks. And you certainly made this segment easy on me because of the 2024 T3 Insight Information Advisor software survey. Yep. And I want to pick out a few stats from that in particular. The first one that stood out to me this year was around tax and estate planning usage. It skyrocketed. In fact, tax planning software went from being used by around 29% of advisors in 2022 to 43% this year. And same thing for estate planning. You know, in 2022 is about 10, 11%. And this year it's closing in on 40%. What's changed?
Well, I think in tax planning, a lot of it had to do with Holista Plan and to a lesser extent, FP Alpha, right? Those two firms can read 1040s and other tax documents and summarize them and help advisors in advising their clients. So that's a real step forward in automation for advisors. And I think, you know, everybody should be conscious of tax planning that does financial planning. And so I think that's great. And, you know, we're hoping those numbers go even higher next year. As far as estate planning, it's really funny. 4 or 5 years ago, we didn't even have that category. And then we created the category because all of these new firms started popping up that were dealing with different parts of the estate planning process. You know, Vanilla was initially doing something different than they do now. There's Encore. There's FP Alpha also has advanced estate planning. And so we already had some pretty good numbers. And we included, I believe, Money Guides, advanced planning, but we had failed to include, for some reason, e-monies. So I think a lot of the jump this year was just due to the fact that we included e-money in it, which we should have done in the past. So very sorry, e-money. We should have included you before. But, you know, really, we weren't originally thinking about the Money Guide, estate planning as Money Guide, because it used to be a standalone program, and then it was purchased by Money Guide. And so that changed everything. And then we said, well, if we're including them, it's only fair to include the other comprehensive programs, which we've done. And I think now, you know, we have a much more comprehensive view of what's going on in that area.
So do you think moving forward, you'll have to add even more categories? I always joke with our Wealthies Awards program that every year somehow Tim Welsh manages to add more categories, but we almost have to with so much specialized planning opportunities popping up.
Yeah, but you know, I think the challenge we have as opposed to the Wealthies is that people are only willing to take a survey and spend so much time on it. And so if we keep expanding it, it's just going to get unwieldy. So I do think there are some categories that we followed in the past that maybe are a little less relevant now. And maybe we'll take a few of those questions out next year in order to add one or two. I really don't want to see the survey adding any more questions.
I think that's a fair approach. So let's talk about one of your pet peeves, which is around cybersecurity adoption. And while satisfaction rates are high when advisors do engage with this technology, market penetration and adoption is still pretty low. It was hovering around 25%, according to the study. What's going on here?
What's going on is advisors don't understand the risk they're taking, right? I mean, that number, as far as market penetration, should be 100%, first of all. Cyber is probably the single biggest threat to everybody's business. A lot of advisors either think that they're not at risk, or more likely that they have an IT person that is taking care of it for them. To be very clear, and I've said this many times, IT does not equal cyber. They're two separate functions. At every major corporation around the world, there's an IT department and there's a cyber department, and advisors should follow that model. Not every cyber is a full-time job, and so is IT. So if you have an IT person who's moonlighting as your cyber person, they don't know nearly as much as a full-time cyber person does, and they don't know what they don't know. And the other part of that is, or the other point I would make, is checks and balances. If you have an IT person and all of a sudden, or an IT consulting firm, and all of a sudden you fire them, or they're not happy with you, or you're not happy with them, you know, what's to say that they don't leave a back door open somewhere in your system? It's not all as uncommon as people think. And so checks and balances are really important. I think advisors understand that. And again, it is the single biggest risk that needs to change, and it needs to change a lot quicker than it's changing.
And the implications are massive at the end of the day if you don't get this right. And that's why it's so concerning that adoption is so low, because you've said it before, even the tools are out there, but folks need to actually engage with them, be trained on them, learn about that. And it's a cultural thing at the end of the day, from the top down at firms to buy into it as well. I mean, I know you'll keep beating that drum, but it is a major concern.
And there's a human side to it, right? And there's a tech control side. So you have to work on both sides. And the other thing I would say is, you know, this is one area where I do think the survey is a little bit misleading. You know, we list some providers in there that are not comprehensive providers, but we list them because we are encouraging people to do anything. Something's better than nothing, number one. And number two, you know, the scores are very high. Typically, our advisors are tough graders. And if you look across cybersecurity, pretty much uniformly, the scores are high. What that tells me is that advisors are saying, hey, I haven't been breached yet, so that my software must be working or my provider must be working. That's not necessarily the case. I don't think most advisors have the ability to be able to differentiate between a comprehensive solution and a less comprehensive solution, or a really good provider and a bad provider. But I think, you know, over time, the public will, and the advisor public will, get more educated about what differentiates these firms, and gravitate to the ones that really are deserving of very high ratings.
Absolutely. Well, that is certainly the hope. Well, and because you haven't talked to me about it enough over the last few months, I have to ask you about AI. As we know, it's changing the wealth management landscape, but what are the actual use cases you're seeing here? We're likely going to see firms pouring tens of thousands, if not millions, into generative AI initiatives. So what do you anticipate is next here?
Well, again, I think there's kind of a dichotomy, right, between sort of the low-hanging fruit that you can do on your own and the things that you're going to rely on your providers to provide. So on the things you can do on your own, and we have talked about this a few times, you know, there's a lot of things that advisors can do today with, for example, ChatGPT or what used to be called Bard, now Gemini from Google, and other generative AI products that are more of a general nature and that don't, you know, that don't entail using PII, personally identifiable information, or things like that, that are fine to use, right? So if you're writing a blog post, why not get a ChatGPT or something like it to help you create an outline, at least, or a first draft? If you're at holiday season and you're trying to identify gifts for people, you know, with the right prompts, you can say, they're of this age, these are their interests, this is how much I'm willing to spend. It'll generate some really good recommendations. Brainstorming, HR questions for prospective hires, and the list goes on and on. So I think there's a lot of things you can do today that are really low-hanging fruit that literally cost you nothing and that will save you time. On the other side, you know, we're starting just to see over the last few weeks, and I think we'll see more in a couple of weeks at the Orion conference, the emergence of some AI being built into products that advisors already use. So FP Alpha was early to that game, and they're a little farther along than some others in various ways. But, you know, I think we were just at AdviseOn conference. They made a number of announcements around AI that I think are really going to be game changers. Morningstar, you know, has debuted Mo, which is their avatar kind of generative chatbot that can answer all kinds of questions, and it'll soon be a lot smarter than it is today. And I think, you know, from what I hear at the upcoming Orion conference, they're also going to be revealing some new innovations that they have on the AI front. So I think a lot of it will be built into our existing products in a compliant way, slowly but surely. A lot of it will have to do with client service initially or data retrieval, because that's, I think, pretty safe. I don't think within the next few weeks or months you're going to see AI creating portfolios or things like that, because I just think everybody's going to wait to hear what the SEC and other regulators have to say about that issue.
On behalf of wealthmanagement.com, we invite you to join us on May 13th through 16th at Hollywood, Florida for Wealth Stack, part of Wealth Management Edge. Our agenda is designed to power a new generation of growth-oriented advisors with the latest innovations and trends in technology strategies. From captivating keynote speakers to interactive workshops, dedicated think tanks, a dynamic exhibit hall, and hands-on demonstrations of cutting-edge technologies, you'll leave with a deep understanding of how to accelerate growth at your practice. Use promo code podcast20 to save 20% off your registration. Visit wealthmanagementedge-event.com for more information.
I would have to agree with that, but I did warn you that we'd be covering, well, all of it in this conversation. So sure. Speaking of the future, I just want to pivot and actually talk about next gen a little bit, because it seems obvious that advisors should be connecting with next gen clients, but that also requires advisors to become much more savvy around marketing technology and lean into things like understanding behavioral finance. So what advice would you give to advisors who actually have the future in mind?
Well, again, I think, you know, the low hanging fruit is the kids and grandkids of your current clients, right? If you're not reaching out to them, you're making a big mistake. But again, to your point, if your technology was built, you know, 10 years ago, it's not something that the next generation of investors is going to gravitate to. So you need to have, you know, a great client portal. You need to have tools that address what their concerns are. And you need to have some younger advisors who obviously can connect on a different level with those kind of folks. As far as marketing, there's a number of firms out there that are already using AI in their marketing approach. FMG Suites comes to mind. Catchlight is another one, Lead Gen, that's already using AI, and there are others. So I do think you can use technology to zero in on the type of demographic that you want to address. And, you know, you're going to have to meet the next generation of clients where they want to be met. So whether that's, you know, on the web, through a chat bot, through text, whatever it may be, years ago, kind of advisors set the rules and clients followed. Now it's more the clients are setting the rules and the advisors have to follow.
And you've said before that advisors don't add much in investment alpha. So in today's day and age, where can they add value if tech can essentially do the job for you?
Yeah, I think, look, if you're putting together a portfolio of mutual funds or ETFs for clients based on some widely used asset allocation model, anybody can do that. There's no value add. There's some value add, some real value add in tax alpha. And that works well the larger the client is. For really small clients, you know, they don't have a lot of assets. So the tax alpha you're going to generate from that is negligible. I really think the next frontier is custom direct indexing, where you'll create custom portfolios for clients that really align with their beliefs and their needs and their goals and their time frame. And you'll be able to do a much more customized job of creating a portfolio that really melds with that client. And that'll create a much stickier relationship, because if you can create it and white label it, they're not going to be able to go across the street to another advisor and replicate that. So whether it's faith-based, goal-based, factor-weighted, ESG, whatever the case may be, I think new tools are going to allow you to do that. And there's a lot more sort of custom indexing technologies that are coming to market. So I think there'll be lots of choices for advisors. And as you know, we gave Syntax Data an award at our most recent T3 conference because I think they have a unique data set that really helps advisors create those very personal portfolios.
So I ask you a lot about what's coming down the pike, but what popular wealth tech trend or belief do you actually disagree with and why?
I don't know if it's a wealth tech trend I disagree with. You know, we've been hearing for 20 plus years that there's going to be a shortage of advisors as my generation hangs it up. But I don't really think that's the case. I think, you know, a combination of the marketplace, capital markets, and also technology are going to solve for that. I sincerely believe that with the advances we're having in technology between the next 2 or 3 years, the typical advisor will be able to double, if not triple, the number of advisors households that they service and service well. In fact, I really foresee a time where they'll be able to have 2 or 3 times the amount of households they have today and service them better than they do today. So I think technology will take care of part of it. And I think just the free markets will take care of it. You know, it's supply and demand. If there is enough demand, we'll get the supply of people we need, even if they're career changers or whatever the case may be. So I'm not as worried about that. And I think that's one that's on everybody's mind.
Yes, it is. You are one of the first to actually have a little optimism behind it, so I'm surprised.
Yeah, I think, you know, M&A is another thing that I worry about a little bit. There's been a tremendous amount of merger activity, not just on the advisor side, but also on the fintech side. And you look at how many companies that used to be exhibitors at T3 have gotten bought out in the past, I don't know, decade. It's literally dozens. And then with the TD Ameritrade merger with Schwab, I was really worried that there was going to be a lack of innovation in the wealth tech space. But I think thankfully, coming out of COVID, that's not what we're seeing. You know, we are seeing more emerging tech firms come to market again. We're seeing new custodians come to market. So again, I think the marketplace is taking care of it. There's a lot of smart people out there that can get financing if they don't already have money and if they see a real opportunity to create value in this community, I think they'll continue to do that.
So, if you were to compare the evolution of fintech to a revolution from history, which one would it be? It seems like we're at a really pivotal point right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. There's different degrees of revolutions, right? I think it's more than evolution because, you know, for example, well, if you go all the way back to the 90s before it was common for advisors to have computers and email and websites, that was a revolution, right? Before that, they were doing financial planning on a calculator, right? Like an HP 12C or something. I think there was sort of a mini revolution with the advent of the iPhone. Because if you look before the iPhone, most advisors did not really have, you know, they had mobile phones, but they weren't mobile devices, right? They weren't computers. And the adoption by this industry of the iPhone was kind of historic in how fast it got adopted, much faster than any technology had ever been adopted before. And so I think we're at another inflection point, very similar to that with AI. Like I said, you're not really seeing it yet because the iPhone version of AI hasn't really come to market yet for advisors, but it will very soon. And when it's literally built into everything we use, it's going to change dramatically the way advisors operate.
Well, I appreciate you answering all my questions in that segment because I did take you all over the map. But it is time for segment two of this episode, Ask Us Anything, where I've gone out to the social universe and asked them to submit questions they want answered by you, Joel. And we did have a few folks slide into the DMs this week. So if you're ready to get put in the hot seat, I will start firing away.
I'm not worried.
All right, first question. What does all the recent changing of the guard mean for the industry between Nitrogen, Orion, and Envestnet, and now the recent news with Vanguard?
I mean, it's something that's obviously on our radar screen. I think the jury's still out, right? I mean, you have activist investors involved in Envestnet. I don't think anybody knows for sure what's going to happen there, but I think it bears very close watching. I would say something similar about Orion. Natalie's great. I know her a bit. Many people I've talked to hold her in high regard. But, I really do think Eric Clark was a unique individual with a unique culture, and there's going to be some challenges in keeping that culture together. So we just have to watch and see and wait and see. Vanguard, again, I don't think was as impactful in the marketplace as the other two. So yes, while it's just another cause, another red flag and something to keep an eye on, I don't think that one is a game changer really for most people. And again, Nitrogen, look, Aaron is a great guy. He's a great entrepreneur. And again, he created a culture there that I think was very unique. He left them in good stead, but can people continue to carry it on, number one? And once you reach a certain level of growth, to keep that level of growth going percentage-wise in the future becomes more and more challenging. So I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm just saying these are all things we're watching very closely. And I think anybody who does business with any of those companies needs to pay attention. I'm optimistic, but realistic.
I think that's fair. The other question we got was, what are your thoughts about big tech moving into wealth management? I mean, is Amazon going to become a bank eventually?
Well, I think, again, there's big tech and wealth tech, and there's a lot of stuff in between. So this particular space is very highly regulated. It's very idiosyncratic. I've seen a lot of startups coming from some of those firms who thought they understood the space and didn't, and they haven't gone very well for the most part. So I think it's more challenging than they think, number one. And I think number two, if you look at the history of all of those very large companies, tech companies, they much prefer industries that are less highly regulated. This is probably the most highly re one of the most highly regulated industries in the country. And so for them, it's not low-hanging fruit. I would never say never. Some of them have made attempts to get in before and they haven't gone very well. I don't necessarily think they'll give up, but I just think I'm not worried in the immediate future, like the next 2 or 3 years of Amazon or Google coming in and eating our lunch.
That's fair. Well, appreciate you being put on the spot and your answers in the hot seat there, Joel. But we have come to our final and what might be my favorite segment, stack it or whack it. So I'm going to throw out a few technologies, not always wealth tech related. And sometimes they're just random thoughts, especially if I know you. And you tell me if they are essentially worth the hype or not, AKA stack it or whack it. So the first one I have for you. Fun fact, we both have a special place in our hearts for Argentina. So I have to ask, stack or whack steak in Argentina versus the US?
I would say stack, and I'll tell you why. I think you can absolutely get a world-class steak in the United States, but you're going to pay up for it. In Argentina, you can get a really good steak for a fraction of the price. And it's really, really difficult to find a bad steak in Argentina. So I wouldn't say that's the case in the States. So I would say stack it.
Yes, Argentina is the only
Also, you can
place.
get great wine a lot cheaper in
That is
Argentina to
true.
go with that steak.
I was going to say it's the only place I've been able to eat steak at basically midnight and not feel terrible afterwards.
There you go.
Part of the culture. All right. So, second one, it is a tech question. I have to ask about blockchain. So, is it going to upend financial services, stack or whack in its current state?
I'm going to say stack again with some qualifiers.
That's fair.
I think in the United States, again, because we're so highly regulated and because they're entrenched industries, it's a little more challenging for blockchain. But from what I hear from blockchain experts, it's a lot more prevalent and growing faster overseas because there is no infrastructure that needs to be replaced in some cases. So you're starting from scratch. I think the technology itself is very promising. I'm a little, disappointed that some of the use cases that I see for it in the United States have not really materialized, but I think some of those use cases are materializing in other countries. And so I think on a worldwide basis, it's a stack it. It may be a little bit of a whack it in the US.
All right. Nothing wrong with a few caveats. Well, Joel, this has been an absolute blast. Thank you again for coming on. And feel free to tell listeners where they can find out more about you and what you're working on at T3, and if you can share anything around T3 2025.
Sure. Well, we had hoped to have T3 2025 all lined up, but that our hotel fell through. So it's going to be a few more weeks before we have an announcement on the venue, but it'll likely be, the early, first quarter of 2025. T3conferences.com is where you'll be able to go to find out as soon as there's an announcement. And for all the other things we do, T3technologyhub.com. So, for example, if you want to download the survey that Shannon referred to, the full survey, T3 Inside Information Tech Survey. It's on the website, on the front page, there's a link and it's absolutely free. So feel free to download it.
Amazing. Well, thank you again, Joel. And be sure to like and subscribe to the Wealthstack podcast on all major podcasting platforms and follow all things Wealthstack on wealthmanagement.com, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And if you want the in-person Wealthstack experience, join me May 13th through 16th at the Diplomat in Hollywood, Florida for Wealth Management Edge. Thank you all for tuning in. Trade PMR offers to support the growth that RIAs deserve. Whether you're looking to add an additional custodial services provider or make the switch to a new one, Trade PMR offers advisors access to dedicated team members. So when you need help, you know exactly who to call. Trade PMR, member of FINRA and SIPC.